Welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco, the show that brings you inspiring stories from the heart of Central Texas's vibrant creative scene. I'm Fiona Bond, and each episode we meet the artists, leaders, and visionaries building a more creative Waco and invite you to be part of it. Today's episode is full of creative spark and purpose. First, we'll hear from Stephen Yui, muralist and mentor who's now leading Creative Waco's art apprenticeship program, helping young artists take their first steps into professional creative careers. Then we'll be joined by Sammy Brown, a talented singer-songwriter from Waco, whose blend of country and Americana is capturing hearts across Texas and beyond. And finally, we'll hear from Chief Cheryl Victorian, Waco's chief of police, who's not only a nationally respected law enforcement leader, but also a playwright and newly published children's author. Both Chief Victorian and Sammy Brown will be featured at the last Levitt Amp concert coming up on Wednesday. But let's dive in with speaking to Stephen Yui. He is a muralist, arts educator, and mentor who brings more than a decade of experience in public art and youth arts education. Before coming to Waco, Stephen served as lead artist and mural program director with Thrive Collective in New York City, helping young people transform their neighborhoods through art. Since moving to Central Texas, he's worked on beloved projects like the Penguin Shores mural at Cameron Park Zoo, and now he's taken the helm of Creative Waco's art apprenticeship program, leading the next generation of Waco artists as they build skills, confidence, and community through public art. And in case you're wondering, Stephen is also currently at 36 burritos eaten with his jiu-jitsu friends this year. He keeps a track on social media. Stephen, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you. We're a lot further on that count.
Oh, are you really? That's an old stat. I'm so sorry. I have under-burritoed you here. Well, you've worked in cities across the country and more recently, New York City, using art as a tool for transformation. What first drew you to mural making and youth mentorship?
Growing up, my parents were pastors. So I was just raised around people that were always serving the community. As I got older, I got involved with working with children's ministries and things like that. Eventually moving to New York City, I was always creative growing up, but applied myself more to sports. And then in New York, we were sponsoring a mural at a local school and got involved. I was just supposed to be planning the ribbon cutting ceremony. And then I was at 7 different locations that year, just assisting, learning everything that I could. And the rest is kind of history. So,
wait, you say that like that's a normal thing. That is not a normal thing. So what does that history look like? How does I'm helping with a ribbon cutting turn into I have a career as a muralist and educator? Because that does not seem obvious to me.
Like I said, I was always creative growing up. And then we were helping out one day with some students, and the lead artist, he was like a masterclass artist, Sam Wisneski, and he was like, oh yeah, just hang out with the kids, draw with them. He saw what I was drawing, and he was like, oh, what art classes have you taken? I was like, I've never taken an art class. And he was like, that's strange. He's like, are you interested in this? I was like, I guess. Like, I didn't really know what it meant.
Yeah. And then it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, exactly. The following week, I was helping him at Mount Eden, a school in the Bronx. We were working with like second and third graders. And on the way back to Brooklyn on the train, he was like, oh, like, could you see yourself being a mural artist one day? And I laughed in his face. And I was like, I'm not an artist. I'm not skilled enough. And he's like, well, you have the people skills and I can teach you the art skills. Wow. And so I just tagged along with him to every mural site and just learned everything that I could. I ended up living with him and his wife and his 2 kids for like 6 months and just continued to learn, and then was leading my own projects the following year. And I've just kind of stuck with it.
So that was kind of an apprenticeship. And I think that's so interesting as we look now at what you're doing here in Waco, because you're leading an apprenticeship program where that kind of mentorship is part of how the next generation of artists are being cultivated. Tell us a little bit about the program and this year's students that you're working with.
Yeah, art apprenticeship is an incredible opportunity. I wish I had something like that when I was younger, which as an art mentor, I tell other mentors, like, think about how you can provide the thing you wanted when you were a young person. And so this program is a paid opportunity. They get to collaborate with people from the local community, whether it's artists or key stakeholders. And we just guide them through the entire process from start to finish. This year, we're going to be painting on 7th Street. It's actually going to be a mural on the pavement, which is very unique.
Right. Not we've never done this before. Yes.
So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be an interactive piece. I don't want to say too much about it. Want
it's
people
a
to
surprise,
come out and
help. But it's very cool.
Yeah.
It's a great design.
And then we'll be doing a studio project where they work on a personal zine and a mixed media piece, really about who they are as creatives and how their community has influenced them and how they influence their community. And we'll be doing the exhibition at Washington Gallery again this year. So it's a really great opportunity. Incredible group of interns this year. They're all incredibly talented, really great people, collaborate really well.
And are they from one school? Because they're high schoolers, right?
Yeah, so they're all high school age. We have like sophomores to seniors. We have a few returning students, but we have students from 7 different schools all around McLennan County.
That's fantastic. Okay, and so I believe we have Community Paint Day coming up, right? So it's May 31st. How can people participate in this program? Firstly, if they're interested in Community Paint Day or in just observing the work that the apprentices are doing.
Yeah, so we'll be painting Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. till about noon. So if you just want to come by and say hi or talk to us about the program or the project.
But don't step in the paint.
Yeah, don't step in the paint. But you can come by and say hello to us while we work. It's going to be a very public site. For Community Paint Day, we have an Eventbrite link where you can register for a certain time slot. That just helps us keep it nice and organized, make sure people don't step in paint. But we invite people to register through the link. If you don't have the opportunity to register in time, then you can come and participate in other activities.
Fantastic. And I think, is it June 21st that people can have a chance to see the students, the apprentices painting their own pieces?
Yeah, each mentor group is going to be designing their own mural for a mural battle at Eastside Market on June 21st. The time for that date is to be determined, but be on the lookout for that information.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Stephen. It's great to hear about the project, and we're so lucky to have you here in Waco. We really can't wait to see the new mural on 7th and Austin as it takes shape. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco. I'm Fiona Bond, and I've been talking with Stephen Yuhi, director of Creative Waco's Art Apprenticeship Program. Next up, we turn things over to David Smith for his segment, David and Art. It's a weekly segment on the intersection of creativity and culture through the ages.
This is 103.3 Waco Public Radio. This week on David and Art, we head to Glasgow to meet a group of women artists who built their own community and challenged the status quo. Here's David Smith.
A couple of weeks ago, I introduced you to a group of painters from Glasgow, Scotland, that came to be known as the Glasgow Boys. They were distinctive, particularly because what they chose as their subject matter. By choosing to paint average people from the Highlands instead of traditional subjects, they set themselves apart from what established painters were doing. But they weren't the only painters from Glasgow. A group of women also forged an identity that was far more varied in style than the boys. The Glasgow School of Art was one of the first ones in the UK to admit women just 3 years after it opened its doors. Many of the young women who studied there rented studio space in the city together, and that contributed to a growing sense of solidarity. In 1882, several of them formed the Glasgow Society of Lady Artists. They wanted to support each other's work and have an organization that would help promote what they were each creating. The very next year, the society began staging annual exhibits, indicating they felt as though the established shows weren't taking their work seriously. The group was successful. It grew. It raised enough money so that by 1895, it was able to buy a house in the city to serve as its headquarters. 2 years later, it opened its own gallery in time to host the Society's 14th annual exhibition. Today, the group is known as the Glasgow Society of Women Artists and has more than 160 artist members and almost 50 members who aren't artists. The most famous names I would want you to know from the group would probably be Frances MacDonald and her sister Margaret, Bessie McNichol, Jessie Marion King, and Helen Paxton Brown. Some of the women got involved with the design movement and applied their artistic abilities to book illustrations, posters, even wallpaper and fabric patterns. Several of them embraced more formal modernism than the Glasgow boys did. When Bessie McNichol died in Glasgow in 1904, when she was only 34, she'd exhibited her work in shows from Munich, Germany to St. Louis, Missouri. Glasgow newspapers called her death a loss for Scottish art and said she was worthy to rank with the best of Scotland's artist sons. Three Ladies of Fashion and the Lilac Sunbonnet are two of the most interesting of her works held now by the National Gallery of Scotland. The term Glasgow Girls was coined by critic William Buchanan in an essay he wrote for a Glasgow Boys exhibit in 1968. The Glasgow Girls didn't have their first exhibit under that moniker until 1990. Better late than never.
David and Art is a production of KWBU and can also be heard on our website at kwbu.org.
Welcome back to Conversations with Creative Waco. I'm your host, Fiona Bond, and this is KWBU, Waco's NPR station. Our next guest is Sammy Brown. She's a 23-year-old singer-songwriter and guitarist from Waco, whose career is already on a fast rise. Sammy released her debut album, Seeker, in 2024, followed by her newest album, Live at the Texas Music Cafe, earlier this year. She's shared the stage with artists like Madian Tay and Lee Greenwood, all while earning her MBA, playing 5 years of college soccer, and staying rooted in her hometown. Sammy, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you here. Sammy, I've known you since you were really little because mm-hmm. you were at high school and even elementary school with my kids.
Yes.
You've now been performing professionally since you were 17. What set you on that path to becoming a musician?
You know, it's funny hearing Stephen talk earlier about when he was asked, would you ever want to be a muralist? And he's like, what? I'm not an artist. I really felt like I resonated with that.
Mm-hmm.
I started out taking guitar lessons when I was 9. With Pat McKee and me and my dad, we would take lessons together. We'd each do 30 minutes.
Oh, I love that.
Yes,
with your dad?
Yes.
And of course, he's a great musician as well.
He is a fantastic musician and a great sound guy. Honestly, yeah, huge shout out to my dad because I wanted to play the drums in all of my 9-year-old wisdom, which you can't really sing and do that. And so I started playing with Pat McKee and learning from him. And he would always tell me, like, if you could do this professionally, you know, like if you get songs together, a certain number, then you can go and play gigs at places. And that was just always something that seemed so out of reach to me. And then what ended up happening, which was a really cool full circle moment this past Friday at The Will, I got to play with Morgan Powers, who I also went to Midway with and had known her for years. And,
oh, that's fantastic.
Yes. And so I had just gotten in town from Michigan. She just got in town from Nashville. But the first gig I ever did was I played 45 minutes before she played at Common Grounds in 2019. And then after that, it was like, okay, like I think I actually want to do this. And then we just started booking gigs after that. And then that turned into, okay, so now like I do gigs. I perform, like this is something that's part of me. But then it was like, okay, writing songs seems out of reach. And then that kind of started my junior year of college, kind of was able to put together full songs and ones that were I was proud of. And then this year was, you know, kind of like the final catalyst of all that with, okay, I have enough songs that I really love, and to be able to record them and put them out, it's been so cool to see the journey over the years, because it's something I never really thought I would get to, you know, or that would be part of my life, and I'm so grateful for it.
I love that. And big shout out to Pat McKee, who clearly inspired you with those music lessons. And of course, to your dad, Sam Brown, who I'm sure many listeners will know. One of the things I love most is watching his face when he is listening to you play.
That's sweet.
Because he's obviously so proud and really loves that journey that you guys have been on together. Well, talk a little bit about your album, Seeker. Your music blends country, Americana, singer-songwriter styles. How do you describe your sound, and what were you putting together in that first album?
Okay, so honestly, the way it all came together. So Seeker is 11 songs that I wrote, and you know that's why I was so grateful for that Americana genre classification, mm-hmm. because it covers so much, and I didn't feel like the album was tied down to just one genre. Like, it's definitely not all just country. It's not... I mean, there's some Spanish-style guitar on there. There's storytelling songs, or there's just songs that I feel like are generally relatable. But I started writing that when I was in school at Abilene, and then I transferred up to Northern Michigan University, which was on Lake Superior, and absolutely beautiful. And
yeah, that's a lovely landscape.
Yes, and I think, you know, going off by myself 22 hours away kind of just gave me that confidence and some of the time and the wherewithal to be able to hone in my thoughts and just kind of figure out what I want to write about. And so, yeah, a lot of it, I think, I used to not write from my point of view because I just, you know, something I was uncomfortable with. And then with this album, even some of the earlier songs that I wrote for the album, I look back and it's like, I totally was writing from my perspective.
I love that.
Yeah, so I definitely grew up listening to all types of music, which I, you know, I'm really grateful for because it helped shape, I think, a holistic view of music for me. Because there are beautiful aspects to all genre types. And so I tried to incorporate that on Seeker.
I love that. And I really enjoy that album.
Thank you.
A chance to listen to it and really, really enjoyed
it. Thank you.
One of the things I love about your performances, and I've seen them for, you know, a while now, I am one of your fans. But one of the things I love is I think you have a really, especially for someone so young, you have a really great way of drawing people into your performances. How do you do that? And you know what? You have brought your guitar with you. I would love for you to show us
okay.
how you do that.
Okay. So one of the ways I feel like over the years I've learned that I'm able to connect with audiences is through sharing with them. Because if people feel like they know you, then... they're more likely to listen or relate. And I think
so
that's
true.
One of the best things about music is that people hear something and then everyone can relate to it in a certain way. So this is a song I wrote about my grandpa and my grandma and just watching their love story. And my grandpa fought really hard against ALS. So this is a song about their love story together and their whole lives together until the end when my grandpa passed away. But it's called Return to Dust. And hearts grow like winds blow. Now I'm here. It's you I found. Fields dance at each chance that they get to be around you. I'm just a memory of what I used to be, but never was. And the earth will swallow us as we return to dust and try to sleep. I will lay by your side. Our only alibi is you and me.
Oh my gosh, Sammy, that's beautiful. I'm applauding you here in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely lovely. I think people can see how you draw audiences in. And I'm so excited that you'll be performing on Wednesday for the final Levitt concert.
That's a beautiful series you've been doing. I love what you're doing in Waco. It's incredible.
Well, thank you. And we're so glad that you get to be part of that. Just very quickly, what's next for you? Because I know that you have multiple talents. You just completed an MBA.
Thank you.
So what is next?
So what's next is, now that the MBA is done, I'm hoping to have a lot more time to write again.
I love it.
Yeah, because it's the whole process of releasing the album. It was new to me and a lot of work, really fun, good experience. I feel like I have a lot more knowledge now. And then I do plan on going to law school within the next year. So I'm really excited for that. And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see where the wind blows, you know.
Well, in that case, you and our next guest, Chief Cheryl Victorian, might be crossing paths in more ways than the Levitt concert. Sammy, thank you so much for joining us
this
morning.
Thank you for having me, Fiona.
Our third guest today is someone who brings creativity to leadership in remarkable ways. Chief Cheryl Victorian has served in law enforcement for nearly three decades, and since 2021, she's led the Waco Police Department as Chief of Police. She's a nationally respected voice on leadership and community trust, and she's the co-creator of Building Trust from Trauma, a course that's designed to help police officers better understand and repair the historical and cultural rifts between communities of color and law enforcement. But she's also a playwright and a newly published children's author. Her debut book, The Me I See, invites young readers to embrace their unique identity and voice. Chief Victorian, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've had such a distinguished career in law enforcement. What role does creativity play in that? You have quite a few creative outlets. And, you know, through writing or teaching, how does creativity show up in your leadership? Or maybe it doesn't.
Well, it does. And I would say it started before I became a police officer.
Oh, I love that.
Going back to when I wanted to become a police officer, because primarily I wanted to be a police officer so that I could work undercover like Miami Vice and Beverly Hills Cops.
Oh, yes. You'd watch those shows,
yeah,
right?
So, you know, I wanted the acting part of my talent to be able to come out. And I did that for 11 and a half years and had the time of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
And creativity now, does that, you know, it seems to me like it's a way you communicate with the public. But what about its role in things like the Building Trust from Trauma program that you set up?
So I love developing curriculum, particularly when it talks about things that I am passionate about. And community connection is key for me, as well as leadership, as well as ethics, as well as cultural diversity, as well as internal, I mean, all kinds of things. So I develop curriculum. I also come up with creative ideas when it's needed in our department, like
right now we've
come up with a program called the Waco PD Culture Team.
I love that.
Absolutely. To talk about how everyone on our team is responsible for the results of our culture. And so it's something that's very new to our organization, and just the ideas behind that and the intentionality about providing psychological safety and impacting those informal leaders. That was just a part of something that came to me, and I was like, we're going to develop it. Let's do it.
Oh, I love that. And I think we are really seeing that show up in our community. I know we certainly, for festivals and events, we always have some of your officers there present as, you know, as part of setting up any kind of public event. And there really is a palpable sense, I think, of how much they want to be part of everything that's good in our community.
Yes, and we have an incredible team, and they exemplify the philosophy of relational policing. So I love that.
And I love that Waco is, thanks to you, playing a leadership role in that. And I know you get consulted a ton across the country and even across the world to talk about what that means.
Yes.
Well, you have just published a children's book. How did you get started with writing a children's book, and what's it about?
So I love going into our schools and reading to our kids. I mean, that's where I get my biggest fans, and those kids interested in becoming police officers one day, right, and seeing themselves in me. Mm-hmm. And so I went to one school, and I had a little girl pull me to the side, and she said that she didn't realize girls could be the police.
Wow.
Yeah. And then about 4 months later, I went to another school, and I had a young lady tell me that she didn't know girls could be chiefs of police.
Wow.
And so that just inspired me to move forward with this idea of creating a book, writing a book, The Me I See, with a little girl who sees herself as a police officer in the future. And the book is about a young lady who did not realize she could be a police officer, but then at career day, a female police officer visits the classroom, and she talks about the qualities and characteristics of police officers, and the little girl realized that she possessed all those qualities already. And she, her focus changed from being a nurse and teacher to becoming a police officer.
Well, and what are some of those qualities that, you know, when you're interacting with young people that you are trying to cultivate in service in law enforcement?
So what I really love about the book is that at the end they take an oath as a junior police officer, and they talk about being kind.
Oh, I love that moment in the book.
Yes. Yeah. They talk about being kind, being respectful, and caring for others. And those are primary responsibilities of police officers, just loving on people and caring about people. We have a people-first profession, and I just have the kids to focus on those qualities that are already inside of them. And these are the kids that I'm hoping to develop and one day come take my place as being a chief of police, right?
Wow. So. And honestly, as you say that, I can't help but think, actually, all professions should be people first. If we are going to be better humans tomorrow than we were yesterday. I like that you have given that to our community and to the world in the form of this book, which is super exciting, and it is a beautiful book too. Who did the illustrations for the book?
So a young lady named Alicia Erin did the illustrations for me. I was connected to her from Kenesha Griffin.
Oh, and I love Kenesha.
Yeah, me too.
She helps all kinds of people in our community.
Yes,
publish books.
And, yes. Yeah. And so I got the connection through her.
Wow, that is fantastic. And people are going to get an opportunity to hear you read from your book next Wednesday. This is part of the concert that Sammy will also be performing in, the last of the Levitt Amp concerts on Bridge Street, starts at 5:30. And I am so looking forward to hearing, watching those kids and hearing you. And watching them open-mouthed as they listen to you, realize who you are, and with your officers right there, the ones who come and help with that that program.
It's really exciting.
Thank you so much for everything you do in our community, and I can't wait to hear you reading from your book at the Levitt concert.
I'm looking forward to it.
So if you would like to hear Chief Victorian and Sammy Brown in action, you can catch them both at the final Levitt Amp concert of the Spring Series this coming Wednesday, May 28th, at Bridge Street Plaza between Elm Avenue and the Cambria Hotel from 5:30 p.m. The concerts are free and family-friendly, and they take place during the Wednesday evening Waco Downtown Farmers Markets. If you'd like the opportunity to put your mark on the fabulous pavement mural that has been created by Art Apprenticeship at 7th and Austin downtown, you can sign up on Eventbrite to participate in Community Paint Day, which takes place the morning of May 31st. That's a wrap for this episode of Conversations with Creative Waco. A big thank you to Stephen Huey, Sammy Brown, and Chief Cheryl Victorian for sharing their talents and stories with us today. If you missed any part of today's show or want to listen again, you can find past episodes at kwbu.org. And if you'd like to stay in the loop about local arts programming, be sure to sign up for the weekly calendars from Waco Insider or the Waco Buzz. I'm Fiona Bond, and this was Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. Thanks for listening, and keep supporting the arts in Waco.